Okay, thanks everyone for coming along. I'd like to launch this collection by reading some of the poems from it. I've been told I shouldn't read too many of them, so I shall read a selection.
Read them all.
So, first of all, I have to thank Felicia for the very beautiful design on the cover. And I have to thank Oliver for being the sound engineer here tonight. And I have to thank Hybrid Publishing for publishing it. So, this collection is a collection of 80-odd poems, some of them very odd. It's divided into four sections, and the first one is called The Hope and Trust of the Times, which is a phrase from a poem in the later section. And it talks about ordinary life, or what you hope ordinary life would be, thought, social life, existence, not without strains or stresses, but firmly grounded. And as you will see, this grounding for me involves the natural world and the seasons, amongst other things. And we begin in spring, which I hope isn't too far around the corner. And the first poem is called Early Spring. Gnats rise and fall in swarms. The trees ring with pardalites. Air hints at the one warm scent. Here is no disappointment, as later, at snow, bitter winds, and other springtime freaks. In early spring, so grateful is the sun, the calm weather, no one can wish for anything further. Creatures wake to their work in this untimely season. Gnats, poets, pardalites. Mistakes in time. I'm not concerned with mistakes in time. If I see uncommon virtue suddenly manifest, I know not to wonder, but to accept the gift as given. No harm to take counsel from when, if virid truths are themselves, they come as they must. No confusion in time that folds and opens. I know that rivers are the arteries of the land, and I see that land in drought, green, with bushes where buildings were. I see a tree blossoming, then snow, spring's all power, chill wind. The house that does not exist yet, or no longer does, is open. I know that wherever our footsteps lead, it is on trodden paths. The cause of events is now. Time makes no mistakes. Beyond Love. Beyond love is an Arctic sea falling against the granitic land, curlews crying from the flows, swans on the lochan. Beyond love is desert grass, desert scrub, ancient peneplain stretching far away, bird calls and a lizard in the spinifex. Beyond love is an empty land, but not without sea, the granite shore, the immensity of Craton Shield. Love. Maps. Ancient maps, their wide spaces filled with fables, dragons, anthropophagi and the rest, Jerusalem the centre, Greenland not yet an island. And modern maps of every kind, political especially, those blocks of colour which state once for all at the regional level desperate changing local realities. Do not ever think of future maps, their dizzying and unknown nomenclature, the concepts that will frame them. It's safe to predict this only, these maps will not have given up wishful thinking, but may have rediscovered ignorance. Black cockatoos in winter. A single black cockatoo cry piercing the winter's noon. Why is our practice left to this? Why are we witnesses, not witnesses? No longer givens, feather, leaf, tell the way now, Plato's unwritten doctrine, are more than themselves and speak out. And we, lazy people who work hard all the hours at our pathologies, have no time for observance and are now less than ever ourselves. Wailing, three black cockatoos flap by, solemn without solemnity, darkened alive as our dry convictions cannot be, unpracticed, unobserving. The sea. The bare hills of the mind slope down to the sea, to bare open ground by the restless shore, the wiry grass, sea stock and bitter glasswood, salt mist and concussion of waves by day, by night. After a time, the calm of the littoral steals upon you, the not cool nights and the unwarm days. Sharp anxiety is replaced by strangeness. What is it? The softness of the air, the relentless wind, the tang of salt with everything. Sea remains unquiet. Mind discovers quietude, indifference, and indifference. This next poem is about the Symphony No. 8 by Havergal Brian, who's one of my favourite composers. It's called The Cruelty of the Imagination. Street music moves to high music and back, all within moments. Stillness holds movement within, and movement stillness. Movement not released is life's energy. If we can figure joy beyond joy, then cruelty of the imagination follows the greatest terror, frenzy, broken like all our thoughts. And so there is no without. This next poem is about a birdwatching experience in Taiwan. There is a standard Chinese type of poem which the poet goes to seek a hermit on a mountain, and the hermit can't be found because the mist is too thick. So this one is called Seeking But Not Finding the Mikado Pheasant. Beneath Heihuan Shan, we ask the bird watcher. He says, the Mikado pheasant is found in this area. It's known that they're here on this forest track, but the clouds are too deep to hope to see them. There is always another spider. You can reach the end of the larger ones, huntsman, white-tipped, red-backed. One bit me once, but not hard. And I saw a funnel web walking through the garage on a rainy night. It's the smaller ones that are always new. The pretend ant spider scurrying with ants, front legs held up for antennae. The small black furry spider seen as a spot of fungus before it moved. A beautiful spider, black with white lines, its legs ginger orange and glowing. The jumping spider with white mandibles, always twitching them as it moves. Another, black with white stripes, a bold flame pattern on the abdomen. A medium-sized spider, matte rufous brown, a small body and a deeply creased head. Another beautifully marked, black and white, banded legs, only the front pair orange. Another jumping spider, brown with shiny dark head like a little bowler hat. I know if I look in or about the house, I'll find one or several. Or if I don't look, I'll see a new one anyway, so many there are of them. There is always another spider. The smaller ones are always new. Black cockatoos in autumn. This didn't actually happen, but but I did see black cockatoos doing this in someone else's yard, and I imagine what it would be like if it was in our yard. After a day of gusting, hurling winds with spattering rain, which blew away the great heat of summer, a morning smelling of coolness, rain, and black cockatoos squealing outside. They're in the rangy few-leaved wattles, which now sport a growth of huge, jostling, flapping birds, their size immediate and impressive, and their calls not far off and sad, but piercing, deafening, a thrill to the stomach. The cats, used to braving galahs and magpie larks, skitter in terror under beds inside. This is no ordinary visit, chuffs flying past the window. How did the cockatoos find the yard, know that the trees were riddled with fat grubs? They stay for an hour, bright yellow tail panels gleaming in the sunshine. They move from the wattles to the hakias, and then suddenly leave at once, all in a flock, launching away from the trees, frozen then to slow motion of deep wing flaps, their calls fading back to distant familiarity. After they leave, and after we and the cats venture out again, all that's left are the shredded stumps of the trees, bark hanging down like a tattered dress about, and the chips of yellow wood, the yellow of their tails gleaming on the dark ground. Yeah. Under the magpie's song, deep rich prelude always the same, and rolling variation on variation never the same. The park rests in the afternoon light, this corner carpeted with purple and red, fallen pear leaves. The song turns and turns about, never rising above an undertone. Breeze turns stiff, and magpie wars erupt here and there with others and other birds, but this one bird never moves, never thinks to break off the song. Golden autumn this afternoon is no longer a time, no longer leads, now part of always. After rain. Looking along the creek, the sky was filled with swallows circling, and further up, more swallows circling, and beyond, there were dots that were swallows circling, and out of sight, more swallows still. The reawakening. Busying myself about books again, the what and the how, names not intent, I realise, as I'd always known, that books are written in order not to be read. Intent comes through under names that are assigned later. The reawakening was again, and is always. Here is the moment, time's always and always golden place, the music of intent not yet named. Overcast skies, pardalotes coming down to look at hollows. I know I could give any name to it, but none is needed to give it to itself as it does. Wisteria. I remember wisteria flowering in the spring, great hanging bunches down building sides, trunks as thick as my thigh 100 years old. This was when I studied, though I never studied then what I study now. And now, years later, I'm looking at bare wisteria trunks a few years old. We train them over a flimsy wire arch, which they have twisted to their growth. See the arch bending, view beyond? You must stoop to walk through. In time, the flowers will brush your hair as you pass by. So the second section is called Satires and Grotesques. And this is the opposite of the first section. It's me flying off at things that are the opposite of things which are grounded. First of all, a general poem called Satire Carries a Curse. They knew well what their problems were. Satire told them plainly. They knew what to do, what never to do, and what not to think. But they could never quite live up to the knowledge satire gave. They were always well entertained by their own foibles. TV, books, even poetry shouted at them their mistakes. This was not followed by their moving on to a better path, a constant. Satire carries a curse if not attended to, if viewed as farce. These spectators of their own follies in the end grew lazy and apathetic. They became more and more lost and perished, as had been foretold. Now, this one is actually nothing more than just writing down what happened. That happened at Sydney Airport. Man with a newspaper. It's a metropolitan weekly paper as thick as a doormat in several sections. He spreads the front page out on his lap with a satisfied look. He's going to enjoy this. But about halfway down, the trouble starts. His brow furrows, he reads more slowly, then breaks off to scan the other stories. There is nothing new here, no news. He hurriedly glances across the other pages of the first section, then puts the paper down, dissatisfied. From time to time, he glances furtively at it, occasionally picking other sections up to thumb through, but to no avail. At last, his flight is called. He stands up with his case and strides off, leaving it behind. Then he turns quickly, snatching at it. He holds it awkwardly, rumpled, under one arm as he marches off. Endangered. Poor thing, little, weak, defenceless, feathers all ruffled. No one attends to it anymore. It's in the shadow, the long shadow of its louder-voiced cousins. Publishers won't touch it, bookshops don't stock it. Where are the readers to discern its subtleties, its grace? It makes nothing happen, a book whose preface you must not read, whose endangered words you will grasp and then lose, suddenly and surely. So, poor honest prose, where will you hide from those bully boys? Journalism, spin, management speak, self-help, fine writing, fiction. Traces of life. Let's be honest, most people are unequivocally dead. They're only legacy descendants, physical descendants, very many, and descendant ways of life, increasingly fewer, leaving only the one way, which will soon end. And then there are the traces of life, the artifacts crumbling over time, and music, writings dependent on luck to live down the generations, and that dusty battlefield of reputation, history, no less dependent on time. Did we mention life in life? Few know how to practice this, and it upsets those who don't, so let's not mention it at all. Steadfast unto death. They deal with the facts, but palm them, taking away difference, change, the need to see themselves as different, as needing to change. The facts tell them people have not lived this way before. They smile and nod and talk it through and rise and go again on their way. Loyalty here as not found in the books. They pass up what they have heard for their part in the great circulation. Generation steadfast unto death. So, the third section is called Sadness is No Longer Sad. And it's about, poems about poetry, about writing and music and art. And here is the title poem, A Spell, A Charm. What is more quaint and useless? Words on a page in tight pattern where nothing refers. A fine hope that what means nothing now will make a sense later. Yet the facts are obvious, the argument can be made. Only the conclusion cannot be drawn, worthwhile, perhaps, to counter everything that Holy Stricture says. The broken-backed habit serves for less than avoidance of doubt, attempts to say nothing and further attempts which say nothing again, only better, amor de lontan. This is the way to conjure a spell, a charm for the needs of others to distort. Let them pronounce the word for love themselves. The form is quite forgotten. So this is a poem about my favourite opera, The Marriage of Figaro. It has all the elements of a perfect opera. A plot with holes in it, intrigue, disguise, mistaken identities and motives, a long-lost something, a sextet with six purposes, ogni donna, moonlight, and characters, beyond character and love, swept up in disguise and music, the rush of music that sweeps away their... Nothing wrong with feudalism, if sharp-witted servants can always outfox their master. You must speak. You must speak and let your words run ahead of all design. Let them discover in themselves their reason and sense beyond your governing. If they speak plainly, it is more plainly than you know. If they tangle and appear dark and twisted, it is because there is no better sense. If they seem angry and opaque, it's not attitude put on for the moment. It is righteous anger, confusion, no strong words, but instead a strength. They will say less than you are and belittle you. There will be nothing in them that might tell others what you were or hoped for or trusted in. But in them will be the hope and the trust of the times, everything you knew but couldn't say, everything you feared and could not put down. An epigram on the works of our poet. He wrote only to please himself, not to please the public of the time, so his poems were little read. Yet they have lasted well enough. The reason? He was difficult to please. And this one is about a mural that Felicia painted on the front wall of our house, a very beautiful mural. And a phrase in the poem is also her phrase about the cat. Goes, mural, outside our cat is lying in the sun, balancing sunbeams on his nose, failing to notice the noisy miners scolding him. The mural taking shape across the world has the cant of experience, but plays with it in the making and forms understanding. Sadness is no longer sad. A crab spider venturing on the wall sports a bright blue, a colour it never had amongst the flowers. A reviewer. He owed no favours and called on none. He had no axe, political or religious, to swing. He reviewed because he had the knack. He could take a book, skim it, and from any angle tell where and how it failed the way. This without knowing the way. So the final section is called Change Beyond Change. Now, it's about the world that we live in at the moment, hastening towards one ecological crisis after another. Obviously, global warming is in our thoughts at the moment when Senate is just about to kill off the first step on that long road and put us back to square one. But global warming is just a special case of the wider problem of global ecological overreach. The fact that We're just doing too much of everything. The planet can't support all of us and all of our activities. And so these poems are more provisional, and they're, you know, sometimes they're hopeless and sometimes they have hope in them. But in a poem in an earlier collection, I wrote a line where I said, we cannot know the end of our own story, and so that's why the poems are more provisional. There is nothing to say. There is nothing to say now. The tide of events has risen and washed away your puny ideas. You predicted a storm, death, destruction, but the great storm that sweeps in is so far beyond what you imagined, promises more than death, more than destruction. You played with words, said honour had given way to gain, worth given way to wealth. Your conceits, clever phrases, are nothing in the face of madness. Absolute wrong, absolute frenzy. Nothing now but to cower, scrabble, mouth filled with dirt. The people of the book. The people of the book find that books do not lay down the law. Instead, everything is opinion, commentary, interpretation, and contest. Their books are not theirs to control for good. They find they are looking often to escape their books. They want to find those missing lines that tell them exactly what they want to hear, without gloss, without any reservations. But they are distracted by gainsayers, unbelievers, champions of other books, those who, most strange to them, pretend to see other explanations. They find themselves adrift, lost. Finally, they see nothing in these words of comfort. They have played pea and thimbles with their truth, and the end of themselves is to strike without justice or find at last an unbelief that saves. This is a list of errata for an imaginary book. Page 2. For metaphor, read truth. page 4. For freely, read, at the market rate obtaining on the day of purchase. Page 13. For environment, read, multi-sectoral resource allocation and arbitrage. Page 19. For right, read, obligation, passive. Page 27. For achieve, read, operationalize organization-wide quality improvement. Page 31. For commitment, read, process-driven strategic realignment and refunctionalization. Page 42. For citizen, read, stakeholder, passive. Page 43. For completed, read, functionalized as a multi-leveraged developmental priority. Omit pages 46 to end. The living dead tree. A tree standing alone with one trunk, dried, dead from long drought. Its other trunk was still leafy, persisting in the face of drought. One morning found a trunk broken off from deep within the soil, lying beside the other. The living trunk lay beside its standing twin. This comfort. Time passes as stupidly as a dream. Effects laugh long at causes and speak only of themselves. Explanations, yours, mine, what matter which, are figured crudely, no line or colour, varnish in many layers. I try to forget this comfort, that it matters that it's me. This house is so broken, yearbooks on show. And life goes on all the while somewhere else. Scorching wind afternoon crackles like flame through stringy barks. It's easy to guess at the end, our completion. Difficult to gauge what lies between. The trial, transformation. A first death. It can be as material as you like. Blood, bone, neurons, habitat, natural cycles, population, long-term trends. Or as spiritual, feelings, belonging as deep as the ocean, centeredness, community, natural world through generations. They agree in this, to see the great destruction, the dying of the world for people, is to suffer through a first living death. And so this is the last poem in the collection, and even though it's not very hopeful, it's back in spring again. The end of renewal. Dawn rain scumble over pear trees in young leaf, sun shining through the purple-grey rack. We wait in expectation for renewal. All thoughts are of growth and provision, our general music. But this will end for us. Renewal will no longer be ours as before. We no longer witnesses. The story that has been written will close, with no one to know pages that cry their grief. Thank you.